The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into Brad Sesmat's Football AZ. I'm Jordan Hamm here on Sports 360 AZ. Not quite Brad Sesmat's Football AZ. Brad Sesmat Show. A lot of Brad Sesmat here, a lot of football, a lot of sports going on. I'm Jordan Hamm. Got a lot to get to. We are here in the spring, just going to be touching base here periodically on kind of where the recruiting scene is. Recruiting never stops. We have learned that over the past couple of years, and it's only become more and more of a market here in Arizona. And that was proven to me, over the past couple of years, but also this last week in San Antonio. I was at the All-American Bowl and talking to some people nationally, talking to some people here that focus heavily on the West. Arizona has become a hotspot for Arizona for football recruiting. So wanted to kind of touch base, kind of see where things were here. We are roughly a month away from second signing day. The calendar has totally shifted. Now probably 70% of the guys are committing in December, or signing in December, I should say. But a lot of these players, there's still a lot of talented players out there. So I want to deep dive into that. Want to tell you more about San Antonio. I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen the content on Sports 360 AZ from San Antonio. But there's a lot that goes into it off camera. You can only share so much within a certain post or story. So want to share some of those stories as well. Before we dive into that, where this is our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And really, I think the rundown that I want to share with you guys is that All-American Bowl experience. So got in January 1st, had a nice 6 a.m. flight. So as you can imagine, New Year's Eve was very lively for me and the girlfriend. She was sick. I was getting up at 4:30 roughly to get out to San Antonio. So thanks to Tiffany Haddish for her comedy special, because we watched that, and by the time it was about 9 o'clock, I was in bed. But got out there, pretty much went straight to practice. And there were four Arizona reps there. You had Keely Ringo from Saguaro, top player in the state at the time, had signed, but we did not know where he was going. He had not announced that commitment yet. Then Bijan Robinson, Lathan Ransom from South Point Catholic. Bijan headed to Texas. Lathan headed to Ohio State. And then Pinnacle's offensive tackle, Tosh Baker, was there as well, committed to Notre Dame. Now, the downside for Tosh, he got injured day one, morning one of practice when he got there. And it's something very minor. It was a lower body strain, essentially, what he described to me. Another offensive lineman got tripped up, rolled up behind him, and it was I think more precautionary than anything else. This is still an exhibition game, and he not only is wants to be ready to go for Notre Dame, but he's also in basketball season as well, and that's I think one thing that's made him so athletic and so able to really produce as an offensive tackle and have light feet is basketball. So he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks with an injury. So unfortunate that he wasn't able to play, but got to catch up with him as well. Talk about the experience as a whole, what it meant to him, what he's still learned from coaching. It's some of the best high school coaches in the entire country each year come out for this. Jason Mons in previous years has been the offensive coordinator. He's been the head coach. He's brought some of his Saguaro coaches, not only with this game, but the Under Armour game as well. We saw Coach Zuby from Higley was out there in previous years. Coach Iguano has coached in that Under Armour Bowl. So not only is this a great benchmark for Arizona players, but Arizona coaches as well. So it was pretty cool. We got to see Dennis Binet come out, watch Lathan, watch Bijan. They got one more game together. And that's pretty cool, knowing that these guys have been attached at the hip since they were kids. Their names have been linked forever. It is always – it's very rarely Bijan Robinson. It's very rarely Lathan Ransom. It's usually Bijan Robinson and Lathan Ransom. Lathan Ransom and Bijan Robinson. So it was pretty fitting. They got to share a field with 100 of the best high school football players on the same stage. So that was pretty darn cool. Obviously, the thing everyone was keeping track of was Kelee Ringo. Had yet to announce his commitment. It ended up being Georgia. We were able to get that commitment leading into the game, so able to post an interview right as it was going. And appreciate Kelee for doing that. Appreciate Coach Mons for speaking to me as well. Once again, like these interviews are some of my favorite interviews I get to do, is guys taking that next step, guys going to the next level, achieving one of their dreams, getting to play college football, and a lot of times in a pretty prominent program, and I think Georgia fits that bill. But not only is it cool to be a very small part of that, but I think it also helps the guys put things in context a little bit, what the process was like, how their school support system helped them get to where they are. Those are the type of things we try to dive into. Any commitment video, commitment reveal video, anything that can be written on a notes app, it's tough to properly describe that entire process. So these interviews that we do usually go a little bit longer and hopefully provide that context. That's the service I want to do to these players that are making these big decisions. And of course, always appreciate them trusting us with this. Obviously a big decision. You don't want this news to get out. We take that very seriously, that we keep it under wraps until they're able to commit how they want to commit, and then we're able to post these. Was able to talk to Kelee about Georgia, and flat out, he just said, Kirby Smart is a DB fanatic, as he put it. And he's confident that with that coaching and being in that atmosphere, that's going to make him that much better, and he's going to be able to go to the NFL. That's ultimately his goal, but it's a system that's going to set himself up quite a bit. And I think that Georgia, it wasn't a surprise. I think what started to happen with Kelee's recruitment was, Georgia was the front runner for so long that as it, progressed to October, November, December, and it was always known it was going to be revealed at the All-American Bowl, but prior to that, I think people thought, like, okay, if they're the front runner, why hasn't he committed yet? Why hasn't he made it public yet? And so people started to think, all right, Texas, they've been in the running. From what I understand, a big part of why Kelee didn't go to Oklahoma for a visit, it was for quite a few reasons, but one of them could have been that he was strongly considering Texas and he wanted to, keep that relationship going. Oregon made a deep push and they had a great recruiting class. But ultimately it was Georgia. And being on field for an on-field commitment is pretty cool. It's the first time I've experienced that. Second time I've been to bowl week. The first time I was actually at the game, first time I was actually on field for commitments. They had seven or eight kind of throughout the game. Kelee's was the last, but the two I was keeping track of was Kelee Ringo and LV Bunkley Shelton, the wide receiver who ended up announcing that he had signed with ASU. And just knowing Kelee, knowing, the work he's put in the past couple of years, the support system he's had at Saguaro, seeing Coach Mons and multiple Saguaro coaches there on the field with him, like, that was just such a cool moment. It was really cool just to have a front row seat for that. So that was awesome. Overall, I loved getting to go out there, tell those stories, tell Arizona stories, get to talk to national guys like Brandon Huffman, who is elite at his job, the best in the business. And I don't say that's not just a fun, catchy title. Like, that's literally, like, he is the dude when it comes to high school football recruiting. And I've gotten to know him the past couple of years. Not only is he the best in the business, he's also like a great human being. So getting to catch up with him and, kind of get that national perspective, that was pretty cool. Another thing that happens in this week is the combine. So a lot of the sophomores, juniors, maybe freshmen, but unlikely, they can come out the day before the bowl game and do a combine, go through various drills. They get ID'd by coaches. Sometimes they get invited out by coaches. I think the thought process is for some of them, I can get in front of these coaches. They can get a little familiarity with me. Hopefully I'm playing in this game a year or two from now. So there were like 9 or 10 Arizona guys out there. Some of the headliners, Anthony Lucas from Chaparral, already has an ASU offer. He was a sophomore last year. He looks already like he's a college player. Like he is a physically imposing individual, and I'd argue probably the most physically imposing in the 2022 class. He plays defensive end, could transition to an offensive tackle. I think right now he'll probably stick defense, but who's to say the next couple of years he doesn't flip over and protect the quarterback rather than go out after the quarterback. Stevie Rocker, Canyon Del Oro, running back. He's a guy that has a half dozen offers, 8 to 10 offers from some pretty big schools, and a guy that Bijan Robinson has dubbed the next great Tucson running back. So a guy that already has some buzz around him, and he was hurt at the beginning of this past year, but I think finished the year nicely. And then Devin Brown, quarterback over at Queen Creek, already a Wisconsin offer for him. 2022 guy, he came in week 6 because he transferred in from Castile, and so he didn't have a full season. He had about, I think, 7 games, but you could see that growth from the beginning of his time as the starter to postseason time. I saw him play against Boulder Creek. I saw him play against Red Mountain. Against Boulder Creek, he played very, very well. Red Mountain, he had some ups and downs, but you can definitely see what he's able to do as a quarterback. And Queen Creek's got a couple of really special classes coming up. 2021 already has like 4 guys with D1 offers. 2022 has some special players as well, Devin Brown included. And then there were quite a few others that were in that group, but those were kind of the 3 I was able to see in person. So overall, a pretty cool week. Thankful for IBEW 640 for helping us out to get out there, and of course for Sports 360 AZ for to help me get out there. These events, it's always tough to gauge whether we're going to be going every single year or you know, which years we're going to be going and going to not, strictly because of where the Arizona ties. When you have 4 guys from Arizona there and an ASU target and LV Bunkley Shelton, like, it's hard to argue not going, you know? So thankful that this worked out. Thankful I was able to experience it again, and looking forward to doing it again. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit about the 2020 class that has already signed, a very talented group, but also who hasn't signed, who is available within this state. I think there's a lot of really good players and a lot of guys who might have seen their recruitments blow up a little bit later in the process, and some intriguing guys on you know, where they could go or the options they're weighing right now. That's coming up on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I am Jordan Hamm, talking some recruiting here. Before Devin Henry jumps in here, talking sport of speed, he has Jerry Coons Jr. With him, one of the best race car drivers to ever come out of Arizona, from Tucson specifically. So that's coming up next. But we talked about the All-American Bowl, the recruiting impact of it, you know, what that can do for the state as a whole. Now just want to look back real quickly at this 2020 class of who has signed and who's still available. Who are some of those guys that I think could be really, you know, really good players moving forward, and some of the top players still available. Now, when we look at this 2020 class, I have said, I've gone on record multiple times. Greg Biggins has said the same thing. Brandon Huffman has said similar things. I think this is the best class to ever come out of Arizona. There are some classes, when you look at like the class of 2017, had a lot of depth, didn't have a lot of top end talent ranking wise initially, didn't really crack into the national spotlight, but a lot of good players. You know, you could potentially have Brock Purdy and Tyler Shuck starting at major programs in the next year. When you look at a class like 2016, where it's Austin Jackson, Isaiah Polamau, you know, they're pretty top heavy and had some very elite talent. And then after the top 4, 5, 6 guys, there's kind of a bit of a drop off of still some pretty good players, but not quite the, you know, the high level of, you know, the national recruits, if you will. 2020 had both. Kelee Ringo, a top 10 player in the country, number one cornerback out west. You go down this list to about 35, 40, there are guys getting Power 5 offers. That's pretty impressive for the state of Arizona, and that just doesn't happen all that often. I think the position strengths of this class, defensive back certainly, when you look at the Kelee Ringos, the Lathan Ransoms, the Jacoby Covingtons, the Gunnar Maldonados. I think Gunnar was one of the more underrated prospects out there. He's headed to Northwestern, but he's a guy that led a very good Chandler defense for quite a while. And was really that center fielder from them, and I believe had 7 interceptions as a Max Preps All-American, a second teamer. You look at, those 4 or 5 guys, like, that can really help transform your defense. Quarterback-wise, I think it was a very good class. I think the previous class was a little bit better, and that's solely because of sheer number. When you look at the 2019 class, there were like 9 or 10 guys going Power 5, really impressive programs. And you look like, yes, look, rankings, ratings, it's an imperfect science. Usually they give pretty good ballparks. It's kind of like analytics in baseball. Like, you don't want to use that as your Bible, but that is a pretty good indicator that you're in the correct zip code of, player evaluation, things like that. But yes, surprises happen. We see it every single year in the national championship. Someone will make a huge play for a big program, and someone will tweet out, oh, look, on Rivals or 24/7, he was a 2-star. Like, that just happens every year. It's not perfect. Things happen. Guys get in the right situations. Guys get in the wrong situations, within their programs, and it's imperfect. But when you look, you go down that list, and Keaton Slovis was like the 9th player, and he is potentially going to beat out JT Daniels moving forward as the starting quarterback for USC and essentially saved Clay Helton's job. Like, that's pretty darn impressive. And you have that top-end talent in the Spencer Rattlers of the world, and kind of go down the list there. Like I said, there were 8 or 9 really, really good quarterbacks within that class. But with this class, you look at, Jack Miller, Chuba Purdy, Will Plummer, Tyler Beverett was a guy, Ben Finley, J.D. Johnson. I'm going to include J.D. in this class. I know that he can't play football moving forward due to health concerns, but like, he was a part of this class, and he was a really impressive player when he was playing. Like, and he definitely deserves to be a part of that group. And then you look at in the front 7, also the likes of Damian Sellers, Jason Harris, Malik Reed, Tate Romney, those linebackers, those Jeremiah Trojan's another guy. Regan Terry is a guy that I think could, with more football at a big time program like U of A, he could develop into something really nice. So that front 7, and then I think it was a very deep class for offensive linemen. You were able to go down the list, and there were Tosh Baker had around 40 offers, going to Notre Dame. You look at Andrew Millick, Noah Nelson, all the Williamsfield guys, the Cooper Darlings of the world, Dylan McGinnis. Like, there are probably a dozen guys, Cade Bennett, that are really, really impressive. So I think those are kind of the position strengths of this class. And now that we look at who is available now, I'd say 85% of the class has signed so far. Of these top prospects. And when you look at who else is available, Darvon Hubbard, running back over at Willow Canyon, was at Chaparral, a one-time Ohio State commit. Talked to him before early signing day, and that's when he told me he was going to be waiting until late. He wants to go out and check out Maryland, wants to go check out Iowa State, Kansas State. Mike Norvell has reached out, I guess, to maybe have him visit Florida State, see if that's a potential option. Visited Purdue. That's his only official visit that he's used so far of the 5. And I think with him, it's just finding a spot where he can get on the field early. You look at, again, Brock Purdy. Like, he had the Texas A&Ms. He had the Alabamas. He wanted to go where he could get in potentially right away. He was backing up at Iowa State. There was an injury. There were some struggles. He got an opportunity. He hasn't let it go yet through two seasons. And he's going to be the guy there as long as he's there. So I think it's a similar situation for Darvar and find that situation where he can, step in. Tate Romney, outside linebacker for Chandler, very impressive senior year, has offers from the likes of BYU, Arizona, Cal, Iowa State, Colorado, Utah, ASU, Oregon, Nebraska. And the what's slightly different with him than other prospects is he's going to be going on a two-year mission. And I think that might have scared some schools off from offering him. I think he would have about maybe double the offers. Just you look at the size, you look at the production he had over the past couple of years. But when you incorporate a two-year commitment before he even gets on campus, some schools are going to shy away from that. Some schools are going to, embrace that, and that's going to be fine. You look at Stanford. Stanford actually utilizes that a lot. They get a lot of guys. They can be pretty strategic with how they use their scholarships with guys that come in after 2 years, get them developed in about a year and ready to go. Some of them are able to hit the ground running. Guys like Case Hatch, who was at Perry High School, went on a two-year mission, had a very slow recruitment, decided to bet on himself, took a preferred walk-on at ASU, and he, earned a scholarship, got some time as a linebacker, as a special teams player, looking like he's going to become a fullback, which just fits him perfectly because he just loves destroying people. But you're able to do that. He was able to stay in incredible shape. And that's one thing Danny Gonzalez said when he came back to campus. He goes, "This is the best guy I've ever seen come back from a two-year mission." Like, he put the work in. And I would imagine Tate can do the same thing. He has that work ethic. We watched him. He was always pretty well built, but I remember seeing him as a sophomore and seeing him now. He's so much faster. He's bulked up. He's in that right situation. Alex Lyons, another guy with who's had an interesting road here, the Higley tight end, had to sit out all year last year because he transferred. And the recruitment started late for him, definitely. But he's picked up offers from like Louisville, Utah, Oregon State, Iowa State, BYU. He's kind of weighing all of those options. Honestly, I think, Tate and Alex Lyons, if BYU is able to get both of those guys, that is like, and you pair Micah Harper with them, that's a very good in-state class. The offensive lineman over at Chandler as well. A few other guys before I go. Marcus Lidman, wide receiver, Pinnacle, has seen kind of a slow recruitment, a ton of production. I don't think he has the elite size. I don't think he has the elite speed. But both are still very good. And he has shown he has that production level at the next level. So if it's a preferred walk-on at a bigger program, I know he's considering Columbia pretty hard. That's a pretty good fallback plan, I think, for him. And I've talked to him. It seems like he understands that as well. And then finally, Andrew Roomery and Jake Griffin, two offensive linemen that have jumped out to me. Roomery has a lot of the like Mountain West and Iowa State. He's considering Wyoming, San Diego State, those types of programs. Jake Griffin really exploded in like a month span. Washington State, Arizona, Oregon State, BYU, Utah State, Indiana, San Diego State. He's visited Washington State, and he's kind of taken things slowly as well. But Red Mountain, a very good offensive line. You have three guys going D1. That's pretty impressive. And then you have Trey Smith on the other side as a defensive end who's starting to see his recruitment pick up as well. Coming up next, Devin Henry coming in here talking sport of speed. Jerry Coons Jr., he is joined by Devin Henry here coming up next on the Brad Sussman Show.
It is one of the biggest, if not the biggest race in the world, and it's ready to rock and roll just next week. The 34th annual Lucas Oil Chili Bowl Nationals presented by General Tire. And to get us all ready, rocking and rolling, we have one of the most decorated drivers in the Chili Bowl. Join us on the inside lane. He is a prestigious USAC Triple Crown champion, the 2000s Midget Driver of the Decade, and an 18-time Chili Bowl A main starter. Driving the Peachtree Motorsports number 25 in the 34th annual Lucas Oil Chili Bowl Nationals from Tucson, Arizona, it's Jerry Coons Jr. Jerry, thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Hell of an intro.
Good. You know, man, you've been to the Chili Bowl a couple of times. You've done pretty well for the most part. So got to give you a warm welcome to the Arizonan, arguably one of the greatest Arizonans to race in the Chili Bowl Nationals and, of course, held in Tulsa, Oklahoma every year. You've already been to Tulsa, though, in the 2020 calendar year, and you had the kiddos racing in the Tulsa shootout. I understand that at times it was a little bit of a difficult Tulsa shootout for them, but how's the kiddos' racing careers going so far?
It's going well. My son, Cale, like I said, he's moving into ran the micro last year, and it was a little bit disappointing this year. We ran the junior sprint, which his last year was his first year there, and he locked right into the A main, so he had pretty high expectations this year going into it. We just had some bad luck with, you know, he started on the pole of the heat race. He won it, but that kind of stuck him back in the points. And then he got ran in the side of by a lap car in the qualifier and lost a bunch of spots. So we kind of started back in the B main and needing to run in the top two and got to third, just couldn't get in that top two. So he was pretty disappointed in that. And I kind of screwed him up in the micro a little bit in the heat race, but it's a little bit disappointing for him. It's definitely worse when it's disappointing on your kid than it is yourself, for sure. But a lot of life lessons at a young age.
Yeah, maybe a Chili Bowl driver here in the near future as well. But looking into the Chili Bowl, I mentioned you're one of the most decorated drivers in the Chili Bowl. 10 heat race wins, 3 preliminary night feature wins, 18 A-main appearances. And this year, you kind of started doing a lot more USAC midget racing. In the past few years, you did a lot of Silver Crown. This year was really focused on the midgets, finished 7th in points. Does racing a full midget schedule kind of get you a little bit more comfortable or settled in when it comes time for the Chili Bowl at the start of every year?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've still been racing quite a bit. Like I said, I kind of concentrated on the midget this year or the last couple of years more with the full-time ride with Petrie and with Cale racing. It's hard to race a lot of other cars or race all the weekends if I want to take him racing. So I really didn't pursue any sprint car stuff. So just kind of ran the midget and concentrated on that. And like I said, not racing quite as much. But, yeah, Chili Bowl, it's kind of its own animal there, and it's a fun racetrack. That's one thing I like about it, is it is a fun racetrack, even though it's indoor. Some of the indoor stuff's not that great, but it's, whether it was indoor or outdoor, it's a great old racetrack. And so looking forward to getting back there and hopefully, like I said, plugging it to get it plugged into the A main this year.
Yeah, you got a couple best finishes, a fourth all time. So what's the game plan now, Jerry? What's the game plan to kind of get you over the hump, and what makes the Chili Bowl just so difficult to win when you got, I don't know, 350 of the world's best drivers going at it?
Well, I think that's it. It's just a tough deal. We, like I said, we made, I think I had the record at 13 straight or something like that, making the mains, and unfortunately missed the last 2 years. But we did have some, I hate looking at excuses. We did find we had a car that was actually built wrong, and we chased it all year long and didn't know it was built wrong. And we got through Chili Bowl and actually ran the car in Florida and didn't find it till after Florida. So looking back at kind of our races and how the car was working when the track slicks off and everything really hurt us. And since we changed cars out, we've been running a lot better, a lot more consistent. So I think we'll have a little better car going into Chili Bowl this year. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
And you're from Tucson, Arizona. You eventually moved to Indiana, where you chased the dream of being called a race car driver for a living. Do you ever get a chance to kind of come back and visit home in Tucson?
Unfortunately, not like I would like to. We get pretty busy just with everything, racing, working, family, kids, and all that. It's gotten pretty hectic lifestyle back here. But, ran down to Tucson for a day when I was racing there in Phoenix in November, and definitely need to get out more. But, like I said, just wanted to pursue racing, so I kind of quit my job and moved out here for a summer in 98 and, did the back and forth thing for about 10 years and finally pulled the plug in 08, I guess it was, and moved back full time, been back here ever since. And that was kind of it. I figured once I was done driving at some point, I'd want to stay in the sport at some capacity. And you kind of got to be back here to do that.
What was the toughest part when you were kind of going back and forth between Arizona and Indiana?
Oh, I don't know if there was much of a tough point. It was pretty nice being a snowbird. I didn't have to deal with the winter out here and didn't have to deal with the summers out there, although it gets pretty humid out here. So, you know, I think trying to have any kind of stability, but really it was kind of, you know, kind of fun. Really, I would come, you know, I'd work some odd jobs in the wintertime and do some stuff that way to keep some money coming in. But, you know, then I got – once I kind of moved out here full-time, I got to where I was going to New Zealand, Australia a couple times through the winter time, spending a lot of time down there racing. So, you know, I was fortunate enough that it was pretty much all I did there for quite a while was just racing.
Chatting with Tucson, Arizona's own Jerry Coons Jr., again, right for the 34th annual Chili Bowl Nationals. But, of course, with the calendar flipped to 2020, do you have any solidified plans yet for when it comes to the rest of this year after Chili Bowl?
I just, you know, back in the Petrie car full-time on the midget schedule. And then, again, I don't know that I'll pursue any sprint car stuff. Maybe try to do something here or there. And I'd like to get back in the Dirt Silver Crown Series. That's just a fun series, especially running on the dirt. I don't know that I want to run pavement and dirt full-time. That's a tough deal. And it's unless you're on the pavement, unless you're going to get it with a team that's going to go test and at the tracks, it's hard to really be super competitive in that. But I enjoy the dirt, so I've had a couple phone calls on the dirt side to maybe get back in a crown car more. Like I said, I had a full-time ride there, but that ended the beginning of last year. So, like I said, I'd like to get back in the dirt crown car and, again, run the midget stuff. And then I want to run, you know, we want to continue to take Cale to as many races as he can do in the micro. He's running a restricted micro, and I think he did about 24 races last year, and we just want to really kind of hit concentrate on him too and get him as many races as he can. So pretty just try to kind of split between the two.
And before I let you go, got to do a segment. I do it with every single driver. It's called Quick Time. I got some rapid-fire questions. Looking for some rapid-fire answers. Some of these are factual. Some of these are just your opinion. You ready to set Quick Time, Jerry?
I'm terrible at these, but we'll see how we do.
All right, well, we'll see if we can get you a little bit better. Get you ready for the Chili Bowl. What is your favorite track to race at, regardless of car?
Well, if it's a track that doesn't exist anymore, honestly, I love Manzanita, and I'm not saying that just because of its Phoenix and I grew up there, but I just, that was both tracks, quarter mile and a half mile, were just great racetracks, and I really miss racing there.
Manzanita, that's where I grew up. That was my playground as a kid, but there's actually going to be a couple of you guys who used to race midgets at Manzanita. Eric Wilkins has entered into this race for the first time since 2005. What is your favorite memory from Manzanita that's probably always going to stick with you?
Well, for sure, the Western World, when I was driving for the Hoffmans in the sprint car and we got docked and had to go to the tail and for being laid up there, and that was the rule. So I wasn't upset about the rule by any means, but you happen to go to the back of the Western World that year and coming back and winning, that was probably the one that, you know, certainly sticks in my mind for sure.
And back in the day, it wasn't like just 18 cars show up and you go out and race, or maybe the National Series shows up, and nowadays you get like 22, 24 cars. It was a good 30, 40 car pack when you had the Western Worlds back at Manzanita Speedway.
Yeah, for sure. I think I forget the year, if it was 08 or 09, what year that was that happened then. But, yeah, I mean, it was certainly a stout field, and it was certainly a fun race. But, like I said, enjoyed racing. Raced a lot with Eric Wilkins there in the midgets, and I've been watching him in the sprint car a little bit too, so good to have him back in the midget.
They're hopefully going to have him on next week. Anything that you want to ask Eric or anything like that? Any juice you can give me about Eric?
No, I think you know, he was always a class act. Even when we were kids, young, he is a little bit older than I am, so I get to hold that over him. But you know, he was always, you know, very respectful driver, and he was kind of brought up like I think I was, and driving with respect. And like I said, we battled a lot and never had any issues, and just glad to see him kind of getting back into it. I work for Impact Racing, and he called me when he needed a suit, so I was happy to help him out and measure him up, get him in a suit and so forth. And like I said, just fun to see him back at it, because I know how much he enjoys racing.
Now, how about a factual one for you? Name me the last Arizona-born driver to win the Chili Bowl Nationals, and I will give you bonus points, fake bonus points, if you name the year.
Gonna have to say the last Arizona. Man, that's a tough one. If it's between McSpadden or Boat.
I think you got both of them, but it was most recently Boat, and that was back in 1997. But, yeah, I mean, basically, those are the two Arizonans. Well, kind of, because New Mexico, Arizona, whatever. Close enough, same thing. But maybe looking to get a third Arizona on there this year. But last one for you. If there's one besides that Western World win that you mentioned earlier, is there just a win in this illustrious career that you've had that just really stands out to you as a race car driver over all these years?
Well, boy, it's hard to pick, you know, it's hard to do one. I think winning the Belleville Midget Nationals, to me, growing up, Belleville was the Indy 500 of midget racing. I know Chili Bowl's big and more car count, but to me, growing up at the time, Belleville was, you know, was it. And for so long, you know, there was only, nobody had won it more than two times of all the people going there, the Stan Fox, Sleepy Trips. You know, nobody had won it more than two times, and it took me 13 or 14 years, I think, before I won that race. And that was the one race that I said, if I didn't win that race in my career, I would have been extremely disappointed. And so to be able to accomplish that one, I think that was my biggest. I out of the three, you know, then I went on to win three there, which is even more special. So it's hard to say which one of the three is the biggest, because obviously the first one was more of a relief. The second one kind of solidified it, and then to become the first one to win it three times was awfully special as well.
One of the best race car drivers to ever come out of the state of Arizona, Jerry Kunz Jr., thank you so much for taking the time. Qualifying for the Chili Bowl on Thursday for you, about 20 appearances now so far in the Chili Bowl Nationals. Rooting for you, Jerry, and thanks again for your time here on the Inside Lane.
I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure here. And, of course, be sure to check out Sports360AZ.com. We're going to have a few more Chili Bowl-related articles up on the site. And, of course, you know, always look at our constantly updated entries for all Arizonans and a little bit of a biography and all those guys. Be sure to check out the site at Sports360AZ.com.